and truly offer to its colleagues and followers the benefits of its insights and its energy. Greenleaf's idea resolves one of the oldest paradoxes of the leadership field. How can a leader be both concerned about the task and mindful of the social, concerned for production and concerned for people, effective in getting work done and efficient in not causing all kinds of human problems in the process? Every leadership theory tries in one way or another to deal with both of these dimensions. The big idea about service, Greenleaf probably would not like this description, is that it is both an attitudinal and behavioral concept. It combines a concern for getting things done with attention to the needs of those who are getting things done. There are not two functions, there is only one: servanthood. Greenleaf's challenge is to make a worldly and pressured and somewhat distracted, exhausted, and frightened society of leaders and potential leaders believe it. These essays are the last we shall see of him, speaking his truth as plainly and insistently as he can. In the next few paragraphs, I want to say a few more things about the big idea. Then I'll close with a few more reflections about Greenleaf the man. There are five themes in Greenleaf's way of talking about the servant as leader that strike me as quite significant. They are as follows. 1. The grammar of the phrase itself. 2. Greenleaf's commitment to practice. 3. The importance of mission. 4. The nature and role of persuasion. And 5. His idea about a theology of institutions. These five themes appear repeatedly throughout his writings, yet, except for his discussion of mission, Greenleaf himself is frequently so offhand and low-keyed in the way he talks that the significance of the idea may be missed. 1. The grammar of the servant as leader. As the reader is no doubt aware, Greenleaf's idea is frequently abbreviated to servant-leadership, or servant leadership. For purposes of economy and simplicity, it is probably necessary to abbreviate Greenleaf's phrase in this fashion. But the danger is that a key feature of his big idea will be thereby lost. In the phrase, the servant as leader, which, after all, was Greenleaf's title for the original seminal essay, the subject is the servant or service. The predicate is the leader. His phrase is an application of the philosophy of service to the practice of leadership. As is apparent in various writings in the present volume, service was the most important thing for Greenleaf. He frequently takes the time to ground the phrase in biblical references and connect it to the deepest yearnings of the human spirit. To be sure, Greenleaf is deeply concerned about leadership, but his concern is that it is being practiced and theorized about without reference to service. For Greenleaf, service is the moral dimension of prime importance, not just for leadership, but for life. It is service he fears has been lost sight of, not leadership. To put it compactly, I think Greenleaf is saying that leadership is a special case of service. He is not saying that service is a special case of leadership. This distinction is important because we live in a period when there is an almost frantic casting about by leaders and leadership thinkers for answers to the profound dilemmas of leadership in our turbulent and unpredictable world. Some will take up Greenleaf's notion and test it for the extent to which it solves their leadership problem. The servant as leader idea does not solve the leadership problem in the sense that leaders and scholars might hope. If anything, it will frustrate and annoy such seekers. Soon we will hear them saying, "Servant leadership? Oh yeah, right, we tried that." But this misunderstands Greenleaf's challenge. As I understand him, he is not asking, "What service can you render as a leader?" but rather, "What leadership can you exercise as a servant?" 2. Greenleaf's commitment to practice. Repeatedly in these essays, Greenleaf reminds us that he is writing